When I read the Good Samaritan story this week, let me just tell you up front, I tried to look at it with some fresh eyes and see some new things there. And the thing I noticed, and that we're going to talk about as we walk through the story, is this guy did some things. When he's showing mercy, it took action. It was tangible. It required effort and time and money. It came with a paper trail. Mercy has receipts. Today, we don't have to come here begging for money from a place of deficit. We're not worried about things. We come with hearts full of gratitude for the ways you have shown mercy this past year, with your checkbooks, with your time, that's ultimately led to the gospel being shared and people's lives being changed in the name of Jesus. When we go to Luke and we start with the Good Samaritan story in chapter 10, the whole thing begins with Jesus and a crowd and someone asking questions that seem innocent but aren't. A teacher of the law stands up and asks Jesus a question. He says, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Most of us would be thrilled to hear that question from someone. Jesus isn't. And then the law teacher says, "Who is my neighbor?" And at that point, we might go get a map or do a TED talk on global citizenship. Jesus doesn't. That's not where this story is headed today. Luke tells us that these questions don't come from curiosity. They are a test. They are controlled opposition. This teacher who's asking questions, he's not trying to learn. He's definitely trying to limit. He's asking Jesus to define the boundaries of who a neighbor is. He's saying, "Tell me who qualifies so I know who doesn't." The teacher here is trying to build a wall. And as we've seen in this series, Jesus is in the business of tearing those walls down. So instead of giving this law teacher a definition of who a neighbor is and isn't, Jesus tells a story. Beginning in verse 30. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, he passed by on the other side. So I know many of you know this story. Some guy is headed down to Jericho after spending some time in Jerusalem, and he's on a dark, deserted road known for crime. And so then some robbers, which apparently are a standard feature on this road, attack him, strip him, beat him, and leave him for dead. And then two people who should have stopped to help don't. First, we have a priest who's heading home, I think probably after his temple duties. He sees the man and he passes by. A Levite, the group who would help serve in the temple, he does the same. He sees the man and he passes by. Now, I know where this story is headed. I know it's a made-up story from Jesus where the characters are acting a certain way because Jesus is trying to make a point. But let's pause for a minute and ask ourselves, why would these two men not have stopped? Why is Jesus telling the story this way? These two men are fellow Jews. There's not a social stigma to helping, like there will be in a minute with the Samaritan. I don't know, have we ever considered the fact that the priest and the Levite had somewhere to be? Maybe they were tired. See, the priest, I mean, he had spent days on temple duty in Jerusalem. He was peopled out. Can I just tell y'all, Sunday afternoons, I crash, okay? I go home, I eat a quick lunch, I take a nap, and that's after 3 hours. Imagine a priest on temple duty. He's been around a lot of people, shaking a lot of hands. The guy needs a break. His family's expecting him for dinner. And the Levite, I mean, this guy, he had a 5 p.m. Zoom call to hit. He had a client dinner. He had a hard stop to his availability. I think when we read this story, we jump to hard hearts and we ignore how life actually works. I kind of think we should cut these guys some slack. But here's the uncomfortable truth. None of their reasons are evil. They're just ordinary. The danger here is not cruelty. It's busyness. And busyness always feels justified. And I wonder sometimes if we're like that priest and Levite. We're not cruel. We're not apathetic. We're just busy. We look at the empty blocks on our calendar and we get anxious to fill them with something. So let's move past those two guys now and let's go to our hero. Verse 33, a Samaritan, as he traveled, came to where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. You know the bit about the Samaritan, the unlikeliest one to stop, the one who would carry some social danger, the one Jews viewed with disdain, which is why I've said before, I think Good Samaritan is such a funny way to compliment someone. For a terrible person, you finally did something good. His first act is the same as the priest and the Levite. He sees, just like the priest sees and the Levite sees. The difference between these two is not eyesight, it's movement. It's what they do after they see. So these our first two guys, they see and they pass by. But now listen to all the verbs the Samaritan does. He takes pity, he bandages, he pours oil and wine, he puts the man on his donkey, brings him to the inn, takes care of him, gives money to the innkeeper, talks to the innkeeper, and promises to return and reimburse. Mercy is not just some feeling. It is a sequence of actions. When is the last time that mercy showed up in your calendar or in your pocketbook? Because it's intentional. It's not just if I happen to have time. And for those of you for whom it does show up in your calendar, in your pocketbook, do you think of it that way? Do you think of it as, well, I'm just doing the things I'm supposed to do? Or will you be honest enough to admit that you are showing mercy to people by what you are doing and how you're spending your time? All of that factors in. Timing, cost, that's mercy. Not just a feeling towards someone, receipts. So don't romanticize the Samaritan. This guy probably had somewhere to be too. The Jewish people may not have liked them, but otherwise they were ordinary people. They were merchants and traders and business people. They had places to be too. Zoom calls to hop on, dinners to attend. So that teacher, the question that the law teacher asked, who is my neighbor? Jesus doesn't answer it, but he tells a story instead of 3 people who had a chance to act like a neighbor. And he turns the question back on the law teacher. Which of these acted like a neighbor? And the answer is the Samaritan with receipts. So the question isn't, who is my neighbor? It is, what does it look like to love a neighbor? It is, what does mercy look like when it takes receipts and a calendar slot? And when I read this story, I don't just see the Samaritan, I see this church. I see you doing things both big and small, celebrated and unnoticed, confetti and calm. I see you sitting in hospital rooms late at night when visiting hours are over. I see checks written quietly for families you barely know. I see time given on weekday mornings and Sunday afternoons and in classrooms and gardens and neighborhoods all around Dallas. When I see you, I see mercy with receipts. Some of those receipts are large and obvious, which is a testament to your generosity. $840,000 given last year to support missions and ministry partners. That's not some spreadsheet number. That's classrooms in Honduras and counseling sessions in Dallas and food on tables. $10,000 given on a moment's notice to disaster relief. Over $150,000 we were able to give to our missions and ministry partners for some year-end gifts because of your over-the-top generosity. That doesn't happen by accident. That happens because mercy is intentional. Like the Samaritan, we too stop and see and walk and talk and go and pay. Some of those receipts have different amounts of money or time. And you might know about them, or maybe someone did them quietly. Have you ever written a check that you hoped no one would find out about? Have you ever spent time doing something that you actually didn't want a lot of people to notice? Those are the kinds of things we're talking about here. A few months ago, a contract employee who monitors our gym and building in the evenings when teams are practicing, this person had some serious car trouble. It's the kind that stops your life for a little bit and makes it hard to get to work and thus earn your living and keep a job. We didn't have to make a big announcement. We didn't have to beg. We did not have to scramble to find the money. A few quiet emails and texts and some low-key encouragement in some of our adult classes, we had more than enough to help this person find a reliable car. That is mercy with receipts. We've had some members this year go through extended seasons of job loss, and some of you know what that's like. The anxiety of just the income replacement and then trying to keep your family calm and manage a job search, it is overwhelming. And it's those kinds of situations where people might feel awkward asking for help. But with some quiet conversations and a plentiful Barnabas Fund, which that's our fund to help our own members when they have needs, and many of you quietly contribute to that, with those things, the church was able to come alongside and ease financial burdens. That fund, by the way, exists because long ago some of you decided to plan for life interruptions among our members. That's mercy with receipts. Maybe it's a night when a few dozen of you show up to worship and sit alongside our unhoused friends at the Human Impact. Maybe it's standing in line, helping pass out food with our friends at the Dallas West Church of Christ. Maybe it's working quietly on a weekday morning at Liberty Street Garden or serving new parents at a Christian Works seminar at our building. That is mercy with receipts. Some of those receipts show up in your QuickBooks. Some of them show up on your calendar. But I wonder if someone audited your last 3 months, if they looked at your bank account and your calendar, I wonder what story they would tell about what you love. Because that's all a budget is. It's a story about what we love, written in numbers and time. When we talk about a budget, we're not just talking about keeping lights on. We're talking about planning for compassion. The Samaritan didn't just respond emotionally. He structured care. He involved an innkeeper. He promised reimbursement. That's not church bureaucracy. That's sustainable mercy. And I'll just be honest with you. Sometimes I look at headlines and I worry about the future of Christianity and the church because there's plenty there to keep you cynical. But when I look at the receipts of this church, when I see the generosity of money and time, I don't feel cynical. I feel hopeful. I serve a church where mercy already has receipts. Now, the only reminder I would give us is this. As long as mercy keeps costing us something, then we'll know it's real. The day it stops costing us is the day it stops being real. And so next year, if someone looks at the receipts of this church, if they see time given and money spent and neighbors loved, then we will still know that we are walking the right road. At the very end of the story, Jesus finishes up and he asks the law teacher, he said, which of these three was a neighbor? And the teacher answers this way, the one who showed mercy. And so my last words today will be the words Jesus ended his story with. Go and do likewise. Let's stand and sing.